All right, welcome to the Muckmakers Podcast, episode 12. A little break from format this time. I know last time we had our Muckmakers Awards recap. Previously, before that, was fun. We had our 10th episode, which was kind of a look back at all things Muckmakers and everything that came before.
Yeah.
Little bit different again this time around. Not really going to go into, well, intentionally anyway, not really going to go into current news stuff going on, really more general and not, going over what was on CNN. We were just talking before, despite not being current news, still certainly relevant. We were just talking previously about how it was ironic that our roles in Muckmakers and in all the other stuff that we did beforehand really ended up cascading into our full-time jobs. And have you mentioned your job? I don't remember.
No, you know what? I haven't really talked about it. I've kind of avoided it a little bit because it's something that I do have to keep separate in certain ways. Mm-hmm. And it's a fine line that I have to dance. And I'm sure we're gonna tackle that in a few minutes. More or less, over the last few years with the websites that we've run, especially with Muckmakers, I've always been more of the writer, and Ian here has been more of the artist and the designer and that sort of thing, and that's just kind of how we run things. And we both do the opposite side sometimes. Sometimes I'll play with a menu or, do something like that, and do a little HTML here and there, and you'll obviously write posts and stuff like that as well. So it's on one person or the other to do those things.
It's worked. I mean, maybe my value has actually been lowered since WordPress came out. But pre-WordPress, if you were to have designed a website, it wouldn't have looked very good. And if I were to have done a website by myself, it would have looked nice and would have had nothing on it. It would have been an empty design for the most part.
Sure.
So it's always worked. But with that, I mean, my full-time job now revolves around web development and advertising. And it's... what we were talking about before was how, the roles that we kind of took on since, over a decade ago when we started doing websites just kind of naturally progressed into full-time jobs because it was almost like, I'm doing this shit anyway.
Yeah, for free.
Right, yeah. Might as well do it professionally.
Yeah, get paid for what we're doing.
So I'm on the more promotion than dev, actually, but it ends up kind of crossing over. Mm-hmm. And you are currently...
I'm currently a journalist. I'm writing for a local newspaper on the Times Leader. They have several smaller branches and in the different areas. The way that our area in Scranton, Pennsylvania is set up, there's... Scranton is kind of the hub area, even though it's been a dying city for a long time.
It was a coal city way back in the day, and ever since coal went out, it's kind of been,
It's
been Terry Schiavo for the last half century or so.
Yeah, they've really been keeping it on life support. There's a lot of small suburb type cities that surround the area. And each one has its own little paper, basically, by the Times Leader. The Times Leader is run out of Wilkes-Barre, which is another big city, which is only, 15, 20 minutes from Scranton. It's actually where, you work.
My daily commute is, I think it's almost exactly 25 miles door-to-door. So very, very close.
Yeah. And, I have an office in Scranton. It's basically the Scranton edition. It's a smaller... version of the Times Leader. We're only like a weekly right now. We're hoping to eventually gain enough audience to move to a daily because there is a Scranton Times paper, but they kind of have a monopoly on the area. And slowly but surely that might be, kind of losing its grip a bit. So, we're we're trying to gain some ground and stuff. And the past couple months have been kind of surreal for me because up until this point, the writing thing hasn't really worked out. You know, you get the English degree and you don't know what, you know, you don't know where to go with it, or, you know, they don't really show you how, what to do with it. You know, they don't. The things that they don't show you in college are stack up a lot higher than the things that they do show you.
Right.
And especially in terms of getting a job. And so, you know, I had been working at miserable retail jobs for the last how many years as a struggling freelance writer doing stuff on the side and stuff. And this, and it finally panned out for me. I worked for one of their smaller papers in Clark Summit, which is, you know, 10 minutes from Scranton. And it ended up turning into a full-time job at their Scranton edition, which is really cool. Position just happened to open up a couple months ago. So I've been doing that, and what we were discussing before we started recording here was, you know, you worded the question, because you asked the question.
Oh, yeah.
You worded it pretty well.
It's funny. We actually have normal conversations that would read as interviews if you were to write them down as we go. I think the exact wording that I used was, what is it like working in traditional media, you know, meaning TV, radio, newspaper in your case, full-time, and then also simultaneously operating a blog, given that, you know, new media is supposedly driving the nail into the coffin of traditional media because newspaper circulation is on the decline, while, you know, amount of time that the average American spends online is increasing dramatically year over year. More people are getting their news online. Spend on, you know, radio commercials and newspaper ads is, if not plateaued, slowly declining, when online spending is increasing by over 10% each year, even in all of the different forms that online advertising takes.
It's a long answer.
Well, it's kind of a long question. So
yeah, it's true. I'll start off by saying that in the digital media age, basically, which is no surprise, and I'm sure, you know, many of our viewers or people who are listening in this case would know, you know, digital media is worthwhile in the sense that people think it's worth all this money, and in reality, it's all free, so how much money can you really make off of it? And of course, you know, guys like Murdoch have very famously been, you know, and as much as I hate the guy, it does suck to be in that position, to have, you know, to be in charge of these companies that have been making so much money for so long, and then to now meet an age where everything that you've been doing is now worthless, essentially.
Right. Yeah.
Because, you know, now a newspaper is worthless because I can go online and get the same exact articles written the same exact way for absolutely nothing.
Right.
And I'm not paying for it. And so he's seeing all the stuff go down the drain. And whereas I don't mind Rupert Murdoch going poor, you know.
Well, that dude's never going to go poor. We don't have to worry about
that's
that.
True. Let's be
Plus, he's like 90 fucking 8 years old, so.
Yeah, exactly. He'll probably go any time. But it just sucks for the whole industry itself. But you got to go where the money is for the time being. It's a very transient sort of business right now. It's in this weird neutral zone where no one really knows what to do, and no one really knows what's selling and what's worth anything. You know, can you make enough off of advertising revenue to supplement people's buying subscriptions to the regular paper and things like that? Nobody knows yet. It's still too new.
Sure.
It seems like it's been around for a long time, but it really...
Well, that's because internet time is, like, super fucking fast
to
us. But to a like, in the actual life cycle of a business model, it's still way, way in its infancy.
Exactly. So it's really tough to say. So, I mean, I was doing freelance stuff, and it was mostly for things that I either found online or, you know, applied for online. But they don't pay worth a jack, because the problem is essentially with freelance work is that at first it was a boon for writers, because all these writers that had trouble finding stuff in their own areas, now you have the entire internet to find places to work. So now here you are with your full resume, your the fact that, you know, you went to school for this and all this shit. You're going online and you can find these great jobs in there that pay really well. And then these companies, you know, figured out that, okay, there's all these other people that don't have degrees, that don't really care.
And supplies outweighing demand.
Don't do the same work, you know. And there was people who just got the idea, I'm going to work from home, or I'm going to supplement my income with something extra online. You know, maybe the average writer gets, you know, 75 cents, a dollar a word, whatever, you know, like something outrageous like that they could charge before. Now it's like, you know, I mean, granted, average is maybe about, you know, 50, 60 cents a word is pretty good, you know, but I mean, it's now to the point at this stage in the game that, you know, 5 to 10 cents a word. You're lucky, you know, if you get 5 to 10 cents a word. And essentially, because all these people that can't write worth a shit are saying, yeah, I'll do it for 5 cents a word, fuck it. So now it's decreased to the point where even the writers who are very good and know what they're fucking doing are getting 5 cents, 10 cents a word.
You know? Sure.
It blows.
I can say, as someone who, outside of Muckmakers, I make and publish sites to either serve Google AdSense ads on, or Amazon affiliate links, or affiliate links on one of the major affiliate networks. Mm-hmm. So I've bought content before. Mm-hmm. You can get content. The freelance site that I was using is, well, fuck it, it's textbroker.com. They have star ratings for their authors. Textbroker staff rates authors. The cheapest level, the one star, was a penny a word. And I want to say the highest level was only like a dime a word, I think.
Right.
I'm gonna check right now as we're sitting here, because the prices could very well change.
I think I said before, like a dollar a word. I kind of meant more like a dollar a paragraph, but you know what I'm saying. Essentially, it was the bar was a lot higher.
Sure. Now it's very low.
Yeah, it's very fucking low. And so it's hurt a lot of the writers, and so for years I had, you know, gotten out of school and got hit with these amazingly gigantic loan payments and had no way to pay them back, because you're working shitty retail jobs. You don't have a, you know, you're not working in your field, so you're fucking miserable. You know, it sucks. So this job just kind of came out of nowhere, and it was great timing, because it was at that point where it was like, I don't think I can make my next payment. I don't know what the fuck I'm gonna do. Like, they're gonna send me, you know, they're sending me things saying they're gonna sue me. They're gonna get this money off of me no matter what, and all this kind of shit. And it's like, you know, I'm flat fucking broke. So it just came at a really good time, and pretty much at the point where I was gonna put a gun in my mouth from fucking retail. So essentially, it worked out pretty well. The thing was, though, is when I to get more into the question at hand, immediately my boss, the woman who interviewed me, she wasn't obviously my boss yet, was really into my writing. She said it was incredible quality above everyone else she had interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what put me at the top of the list. It was between me and like one other guy.
Mm-hmm.
And she kind of strung me along for a good month, making me do freelance crap on these crazy deadlines, basically to see more or less if I could do it before I took the job. You know, because I'd never done anything full time. She still wasn't
sure.
Can you
blogger meet a deadline?
Yeah, and not only just that, but she put me purposely on the city council stuff, and I think her reasoning for that was, you know, I mentioned that I was a political blogger, and she wanted to see if I could write something that wasn't biased, that wasn't going to come off very opinionated and stuff, because that's, you know, that's one of the things that the media always bashes the bloggers for, yet ironically, media has moved towards opinion more and more all the time.
Sure.
Because I think maybe they think that by emulating what blogs are doing, maybe that they'll make money. I don't know if that's...
Well, it's the fucking, like, 8-second attention span that people have. So it's all fucking,
right,
you know, just bam, 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 bam. No actual explanation or context or substance. It's all headlines, and that's all it is.
So, I mean, I was very upfront with her. You know, I gave her the address. I said, you can look at my stuff, you know. And I said...
It's offensive. We say fuck and shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Cock, you know? Balls.
And I said, but that... I said, I see it as... And I think this is what sealed it, was that... I said, there are two different kinds of writing. It's like trying to compare a poem with a short story,
mm-hmm.
you know, or an article with a book. You can't do it. You write them completely differently,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I just see it as, this is writing for one thing, this is writing for another.
Sure.
So it wasn't that hard a transition to do. I could do it. I can write a non-biased article. It's
well, and you were already doing freelance stuff before that, which...
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I kind of understood the format, you know, and you do learn some of that in school. Granted, I didn't go to the best school because it wasn't, you know... They didn't really have great journalism. Like, I think I had one class that was journalism related. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there wasn't a lot of writing classes. And on top of that, a lot of the writing classes weren't that great or weren't
mm-hmm.
that specialized.
Were they
to a profession.
Fiction heavy or?
A lot.
Like, was it a lot
of
creative writing?
Yeah, a lot of it was creative writing. And a lot, like, there was business writing and stuff as well, which is helpful a little bit.
Yeah.
But not. A lot of it is very outdated, and there's a lot of stuff that you really wouldn't use anymore. Like, you don't really... There's very few jobs nowadays where you're going to really need to know how to do an annotated bibliography.
Right.
You know, and yet that's something that they, like...
Is that like a link?
Essential. Yeah, they feel
what's
like
that?
That's essential, and it's really not anymore.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, in very few professions...
Well, it's like photo majors having to learn manual film cameras when the day after you graduate... 9 times out of 10, you're going to be slapping a DSLR on your shoulder, and you're never going to develop a roll of film in your professional career.
Exactly.
Great thing to know, not
sure.
relevant in today's workplace, because it cannot keep up with the speed that publishing demands.
You're right, exactly. And so I basically made the agreement with her. I said, you know, you can call me out at any time. I said, but you can go to my site at any point. And I will not, I will draw the line and say, you know, I'm going to leave this stuff at home. Like, you're not going to go home. I'm not going to write something about, like, say I'm covering a city council meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm not going to go home and on Muckmakers and then write my own opinion of what happened at city
right,
council.
Totally naysay everything you wrote for the paper.
Exactly,
yeah.
And be completely biased because I use my real name on
mm-hmm.
the website.
Yeah.
And
well, yeah, we've never really been
with my pseudonym.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't have a pseudonym like when we first started the sites, we had
right,
pseudonyms.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's something that was popular on the internet in those days.
Well, and
now
at
it's
that
not
time,
popular to do that anymore.
Right, and at that time too, I was going to a small Catholic high school, and one of the schools down the road, Scranton Prep. Had actually threatened to expel one of their kids based on something that he wrote on the internet, because all the faculty knew it was him because he didn't use a fake name.
Right.
So when we started, I was adamant about not attaching my actual name to anything, because the last thing I wanted to do was end up, it was a Catholic school, so the last thing I wanted to end up was in a meeting with the fucking principal, the bishop of our diocese, and my parents trying to explain away the fact that I made some offhanded reference to abortion juice. Like, that's the last thing I could have had happening at the time.
Sure.
If I didn't hate high school enough, at least I didn't, you know, push it to that point by attaching our names to it. But no, now we don't. We talk openly about, you know,
right.
where we live, where we work, what our fucking names
and
are. Like, it's not...
Essentially, like you know, I mean, everybody Googles their names. So,
yeah.
I mean, I Googled my name one day. And, you know, some of the first results that come up are my personal portfolio site and Muckmakers.
Yeah.
And one of the main things that comes up is my page on, like, the Times Leader stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, you can blatantly put two and two together
sure.
and figure out, okay, this guy says he's from Scranton. This
mm-hmm.
paper is based in Scranton. It's not that fucking hard to
right,
figure out. You know?
People are dumb, but they're not that dumb.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not gonna, I'm gonna keep that promise. I'm not, crossing that line and talking about, you know, the things that I shouldn't be talking about or burning any bridges with certain people and that sort of stuff. I'm not gonna do that stuff on the site. You know, I'm just gonna do what we always did,
sure.
Cover the national stuff, whatever. And I will talk about local issues when need be,
right?
But it's not gonna be something that's gonna burn a bridge.
Yeah, and most of the local shit that goes on here wouldn't have any relevance whatsoever to our audience on site. So it kind of doesn't even make sense to do it.
Right.
Like, now, there's certain exceptions, but by and large, it wouldn't really interest anybody who doesn't live here anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you know, I think there's certain things that are like a microcosm for America that, you know, like you can... What's happening
in petri dish,
what's happening in our diocese, for example, I think is very evident of what's going on in most American dioceses across the country, and essentially in most Catholic churches across the world. You know, so, and considering that those issues are such a big deal right now with the whole you know sexual abuse scandals and stuff, and the Pope being involved and all that shit, it's only a matter of time before, which is something I've been working on for a while, is there's some stuff about the diocese that I want to talk about and that I want to, you know, use on Muckmakers and that sort of thing. But, you know, I try to keep the two things separate. You know, I'm not
sure.
You know, trying to cross the line in any way in those terms, which is sometimes hard to do. I don't try to insert my opinions at all in the articles that I write for the paper. I don't see, you know, it's like I said, they're two different types of writing, so I don't really, you know, look at it that way. But it is a funny dichotomy to be contributing to
both ends.
Supposedly eating away at my own profession, you know. But I also feel at the same time, this is something I'm not going to be doing forever, and it might not even be something that's here forever, you know?
Right.
Print journalism may actually be going by that wayside and be at that point where everything's going to be online and that sort of shit. So, you know, I just see it as another notch in my writing career belt, and I got to, you know, just keep looking for other things. I think in this day and age, to consider yourself at one job forever is a really bad career move.
Yeah.
In the old days, you could do that. You know, even our parents' days, that started coming to an end. But our parents' parents and so on and so forth.
You were a lifer.
Back, yeah. You were a lifer. Yeah. You picked a profession. You were stuck there for 40, 50 years, and then you retired.
Yeah.
You know, whether you liked it or not, whether you're into it or not, that's what you did. And nowadays, it's such a changing marketplace, and places are opening and closing all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, something that, I mean, I think just a few years ago, I don't think people really thought that you could make businesses out of the things that you do nowadays. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you told somebody a decade ago that you could have an entire business based around bottled water, people laugh at you. You can turn on a tap and put, you know, water in a bottle.
This is free everywhere. What are you talking
why
about?
You know, falls from the sky for free. You can't charge for bottled water, but, you know, now it's
you can charge $8 a bottle if you're at a concert.
Yeah, exactly, you know. And, you know, with the digital age, you know, there's so many things that people didn't think that you could make money off of, and essentially now you can. You know, you could take free software, free equipment, and turn it into a profit overnight, essentially. If you do the right things, you can make music, you can make podcasts, you can do all kinds of shit. You can charge for it, make money if you get popular. You know, there's a lot of people that, you know, I'm consistently amazed by how many people actually work full-time doing sites. Like, I mean, completely unrelated to you know, our, you know, usual topics, but related to this topic, I would say. I'm a huge fan of James Rolfe, the Angry Video Game Nerd, and he's got a great site, cinemassacre.com. I go there all the time. And that dude turned... I give him utmost credit for what he's done. Because a few years ago, he just came up with the idea of ripping apart shitty video games, which is just, it's an idea that anyone could have had, you know, but he's a guy who turned it into essentially a business.
Yeah.
he started making these videos for free, just for fun, just him sitting in front of the TV ripping apart these games. And slowly but surely, he kind of turned them into episodes. He was adding special effects to the videos. He was adding music. You know, he had his own theme song. Like, he really turned them into these little episodes that were really just funny as fuck and just absolutely really brilliant stuff. And now he's sponsored by, you know, Screw Attack, which is a big, you know, video gaming site and stuff. They pay him to make those videos. He now gets paid to do that. Then he also wanted to do filmmaking on the side, so he makes, you know, videos for his site, Cinemassacre, and all his stuff comes out under there, just like all our stuff comes out of that thin line.
Right.
All his projects go under the Cinemassacre logo, so to speak, and he has all these little projects that he does, different kinds of videos, little mini movies and short films and just videos about like nerdy stuff, just stuff outside of video games, things about movies. He's a big movie buff as well. And now, like, he after the ad revenue from that and the money that he makes selling his videos, he does also stuff for Spike TV, their website. He sells them videos about movies and stuff because he's a big movie buff. And he's gained such an audience now, that's what he does full time.
Yeah.
He makes videos for his own website full time and just does that, and that's it. And essentially, that's something I would love to do eventually. I would love to be able to do something like Muckmakers full time and just get paid for it. It's just not at that point yet. And maybe it never will be, and I'm not going to cry over that or anything like that, but it's something that I would love to work towards.
Sure.
I would love to do that sort of thing. But I think I need the discipline of a full-time job, you know, that really, especially when you're, you know, when you call yourself an artiste, you know, there's that whole thing that you could, you know, you work on your own time, you do what you want,
right,
sort of thing. And sometimes it's hard to keep a schedule and things like that. And it's kind of good for me to have deadlines and have to, you know, keep in practice and constantly writing. Even when those days that you don't want to, you know, if I was working on my own, I just say, fuck it, I'm not doing it. And then 2 months later, it's like, oh shit, I should have, you know, written something by now.
Right.
Whereas, you know, you got to write on deadline. Well, you don't feel like writing today. Well, fuck you. We're going to fire you. You're going to find someone else to write on deadline.
Enjoy your unemployment.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's definitely been an eye opener. It's been really interesting. And it's given me a new perspective on media, and old media and new media. And just journalism in general. I mean, a lot of the things that I thought about journalism are basically true, and there's some things that I've learned that are really cool as well. And overall, I think it's been a cool experience.
Yeah.
You know, I've liked it. I enjoy the job, you know, overall. You know, there's those days where you want to rip your hair out.
Well, yeah.
You know,
I think that's the case with any job.
Yeah, especially deadline day. You know, that sucks, but There's a lot of positive things, and you know, they're pretty open to letting me write about. So like, if I think about a story that I think is really something that people need to know about, they'll let me pursue it. And they'll let me play with it a little bit. Sometimes I gotta find the time to do those things.
Sure.
But you know, it's a cool job.
To kind of circle back, and it ties into what you were just saying too, though. There's a lot of people who would love to be making their living online from their house or from their front porch when it's nice out. You bring your fucking laptop and boom, you're, you know, quote unquote at work.
Sure.
But that has really caused the total saturation of writers online.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So I logged into my text broker account here. Now, mind you, I've ordered from here multiple times. The 4-star level was solid. I didn't have to request any changes, anything like that. The 5-star articles are really good. Like, not only do I not have to make changes, I feel like I barely have to give direction, and somehow I get back a great article. It only goes from 2 to 5 stars. There's no 1-star. I don't know if 1-star was just such a piece of shit that they got rid of it.
Yeah.
2 stars is 1 cent a word. 3 stars is 1.4 cents a word. 4 stars is 2 cents a word. And 5 stars is 6.7 cents a word.
Which is garbage, by the way.
Right. So for a, let's see, if I wanted a 500 word article, which is pretty standard for the web.
Yes.
It would run me $33.50. At 6.7 cents a word.
And to give you a perspective of what it's like to be a freelancer, when I was doing freelance articles, I was getting paid $25 an article, straight mm-hmm. up, no matter how long it was. But for the, I mean, at least had to be 500 words.
Right.
So I was actually making less mm-hmm. than that. For a, and this is at a big, you know, a newspaper, you know. I mean, wow. Maybe it's yeah. not New York Times or sure, anything like sure, that, sure. but this is, you know, a distributed newspaper with thousands and thousands of readers,
right.
you know. And this is stuff that would go up on the web as web content as well as
right.
being in the print editions.
So that either speaks to the total decline in revenue that they have coming in from smaller papers, or they're just fucking their freelancers.
mm-hmm.
Probably a little mix of both
mm-hmm.
would be my guess.
Probably, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, because the market is so flooded, like I said, even the 4-star articles that I wrote were great.
Yeah.
2 cents a word, that's $10 for a 500-word article. Like,
yeah.
you can't complain about that at all. As a buyer, being able to get a good 500-word article for $10 is, like, a
yeah.
no-brainer.
Absolutely. You know, so it's good in that angle
sure.
of it. It's just
but it, to be a freelancer and to only work online is incredibly difficult. Now, at the same time, through my job, I get exposure to a lot of vendors like that, like TextBroker or Marketplace for just writers.
Yep.
So being a writer, tough fucking job, because there's yeah. so many other people that are doing it.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to just do that, you're going to grind it out for like 12 hours a day
mm-hmm.
to make enough to pay your bills and cover rent and shit.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you can crank out 1,000 words an hour at mm-hmm. what they deem at 4 stars, then you can make $20 an hour. If you're head down barreling through all day, you can make a decent amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're able to run a blog, if you're able to run a YouTube channel, if you're able to run a Twitter,
mm-hmm.
and you're able to build an audience,
mm-hmm.
you can make a lot of money.
Yeah.
SponsoredTweets.com. You can pay, or well, advertisers can go, and it's a marketplace. It's essentially a fucking meat market of Twitter users. And it pulls up all their stats. It'll give their name on Twitter. That'll link to it so you can check their profile out. It'll have how many people they follow, how many people follow them back.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own proprietary rating based on, like, you know, how many clicks their ad links usually get when that Twitter user puts something out. Prices will range on there from $1 a tweet all the way up to Bob Vila is $9,000 plus for a tweet.
Wow.
For Kim Kardashian, it just says call for pricing. Bob Vila has about 1 million followers. Kim Kardashian has about 3 million. So she has 3 times the followers as Bob Vila. If she's 3 times as much, she'd be in the neighborhood of $30,000 a tweet. That's just based on the number of followers. That's not saying anything towards, you know, the impact that Kim Kardashian hawking your shit for you on Twitter can have. It may very well be much more than 30,000,
yeah.
but I would say it's at the very least $30,000 per tweet.
Wow.
To get Kim Kardashian to deliver a message for you on Twitter. Now, no one aside from somebody who's already famous is going to be able to get 3,000 or
yeah.
3 million followers on Twitter. But if you can get 10,000, which is totally doable, we're at like 2,500 for fuck's sake, and we don't even really push the thing all that hard.
Yeah.
10,000 followers, you can get $25 to $35 a tweet. So you make 4 tweets a day at that price level, you're already, and that'd take you like 5 minutes to do, you're already making as much or more than someone who's blowing through freelance article writing online for 9 hours out of the day. So if you can build an audience behind a blog or behind a Twitter account or behind a YouTube account, you can make money much, much easier. Building the audience is getting harder and harder and harder now because there's so many people trying to do it. But same thing, you can sell blog posts anywhere from, you know, $5 if your blog is small to, you know, $50, $60, $150. One of the bigger guys in the online marketing arena, ShoeMoney.com, to have him do a sponsored post is $600, I believe, the last time I checked. So, again, he was able to build a following. Now he can make a ton of money off of his blog. To his credit, he doesn't do many sponsored posts just because he's at the point now where he doesn't need the money, but... If that were me, I'd be doing a fucking sponsored post every day, and that'd be that. But even YouTube, there's I guess I'm not going to use their names because that'd probably be a bad idea on my part. There's girls on YouTube doing fashion videos, like how to, you know, do your makeup like this horror celebrity.
Yeah, I've seen stuff like that. Yeah.
Right? And they have tons of channel subscribers. Like, every video will get over 100,000 views that they do. Every single one. Consistently, like clockwork. So they have like 20, 30,000 subscribers to their YouTube channels. The people that make the makeup, or the wigs, or the accessories, or whatever they're talking about in the video, one of them that I know in particular is paid over $250 just to make the video by the site that's selling the shit that she's using. Plus, then she links to the site that she's referencing where she got the shit from, and that's an affiliate link, so if anybody buys through the link, she gets X percent on all the sales that she sends through too. So not only does she get a couple $100 flat fee just for producing the video for them, she also then gets cut in on any of the revenue from the sales. So again, she was able to build a following on her YouTube channel. She drives a lot of sales for these companies, and she can command, you know, $200-$300 just to make an 8-9 minute video and put it on YouTube, plus a percentage of all the sales that she drives.
Wow.
So there are ways to make your full-time income online, but it's shifted towards more more advertising value and not work value. You can't just write articles and make a full-time living writing articles. You have to have an audience already. And that's essentially what you're selling then, is access to your audience, not you writing an article about somebody. You're selling the access to your readers.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Another unrelated to what you're getting at, but interesting thing that I've noticed on playing both sides of this coin is, you know, it's very obvious that the media hates bloggers with passion, and they kind of view them as the devil of the profession.
Websites.
Yes, and a lot of them do, because essentially they know that they have to.
Right, they're hedging their bets here. It's like
whether they do or not, most of them don't run it themselves, you know, they have other people do it for them, I'm sure. But a lot of these people, they essentially run them, but they don't like them, and they don't like that other people are taking away from their audiences and stuff like that. And with a site like ours, which there's many sites that are, you know, political like us, and maybe they don't do the exact same things we do, but it's very easy.
It's in the same ballpark.
We'll say, especially in the liberal progressive sort of, you know, stance, and the atheism blogs and stuff, it's very easy to attack people from afar. It's another thing to have to stand in front of someone and ask the same stuff and say the same thing.
Sure.
And see, journalism, unlike blogging, is a very in-your-face profession. And it's something that I've had to get used to over time, because it's very easy to be a couch potato critic. It's very easy to sit behind a computer and spout stuff, which is why you see such nasty vitriolic shit on the everywhere on the internet, whether it be YouTube comments or message boards or anything else. People are the worst, and they say the nastiest things, but in real life, they would never say any of these things to any of these people if they had to actually face them in real life.
On the phone, half the people wouldn't have the balls to actually even just speak the words that they're totally comfortable typing.
Absolutely. So, like, let me give you a great example, because we are, you know, we're very much obviously against, you know, political corruption, and we fight that constantly, and we're constantly pointing it out in people and stuff. And sure enough, there's a lot of political scandal in Scranton. Mm-hmm. For being a small city, we actually have a lot going on, and it was something.
All those damn Italians.
I had always been more of a national politics guy, and so the past few months, I've had to basically have a crash course in Scranton politics and figure out what's going on in this area, because now that's my beat. Essentially, I do all the council stuff, the commissioners and things like that. Well, as it turns out, one of the sitting commissioners and one of the last commissioners that we had in our area are now being indicted by the federal government. They've been brought up on over 40 charges of, like, fraud and racketeering and bribery. Sure. Like, it is a ridiculous amount of shit. Like, the one paper calculated it, and it was something like each guy would do, like, several hundred years in jail plus pay, like, several million dollars worth of things if they were found guilty on every level, which, of course, it never happened.
Now, they weren't commissioners for all that long
either.
And 40 charges is a lot. That's like one every other month. Like,
yeah, essentially, yes, because the one guy is still sitting. The other guy hasn't even been on there for over a year, you know?
Well, yeah, one guy's the kind of minority whip of...
They used to be a majority of two Republicans, no big surprise there. And now, you know, now there's a Democratic majority in the commissioners, and he's the minority.
The third wheel, yeah.
Yeah, and it's funny. Like, I didn't get to unfortunately, I was covering another political beat thing in the area, and a big mess with city council. So I didn't get to cover when they got actually indicted. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't there essentially when they met with the charges and pled not guilty and all that stuff. They had the bigger writers at our main office handle that stuff. But I cover the commissioner meetings every week. So I got to cover the first few meetings they've done since he's been indicted.
Mm-hmm.
And he refuses to step down because both of them are pleading complete innocence, which is just such a poor idea.
Right. Like, to all 40.
To all 40. Yes. Like, as if
none
they never did
40,
anything.
I didn't do
anything. I didn't do any of it at all. Like, I'm, you know, like, at least admit something. At least just try and, like, you know, don't crash and burn like that.
Right.
Because then the feds are just going to be that much more after you, you know, to find everything. Because, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious when you see the charges and you put two and two together. It's very obvious to see that they are guilty. The feds wouldn't be here on our doorstep if there wasn't something legit there. You know?
Yeah, it's not like this is the two Democrat majority leader commissioners bringing up charges on a local level against the past commissioners. This is the fucking feds filing charges. Like,
Just got done with Luzerne County.
Right.
Which is right next
door. Yeah, there was all the... That's where... Wilkes-Barre's in Luzerne County.
Exactly.
So that's where I'm working. There was all those kickbacks going on where the judges were in bed with the fucking juvenile detention centers. And they...
National news.
Right. They were getting kickbacks for every kid that they sent to juvie. And that was, like, fucking really widespread down there.
Yes.
And that was a whole big thing. So, yeah, they wrapped all that up.
It was mentioned, actually, in Capitalism, A Love Story, with Michael Moore's last
Get movie. Out of here. I still haven't seen that, ironically.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It was a decent movie. I think in some ways it might not go far enough, but it's a pretty good movie. But I was shocked to see it in there, being from the area and stuff, and seeing, you know, footage from art.
We never, nothing good will ever get us into a movie.
No,
aside from The Office. The Office is as close as we're going to fucking get to a positive media mention.
Which,
everything else is fucking corruptionist and, you know, priest rape that and yada, yada, yada.
Sure. So the, it was weird to see, it's surreal to see us on there. So the now that the feds are done with Luzerne, they're coming to Lackawanna, and sure enough, they're finding stuff all over the place. Because, I mean, anybody who lives here can tell you that the cronyism and corruption is unbelievable here, you know? It really, a lot of this stuff depends on who you are and who you're connected to. And
even just getting a fucking job in the Scranton School District as a teacher
requires
you to be connected.
Everything
you here is. That's just how it is.
And
it always has been.
Yeah. And no one's ever looked at it otherwise. And it's funny because when you breed corruption like that for so long, essentially after a while, no one really thinks they're committing a crime.
Right, yeah.
And
this
in
is
a
how
way,
shit gets done here.
In a way, now that I've covered the commissioners for a while, and I maybe I don't know this guy incredibly well, but I really get the impression that, in a way, maybe he honestly does think he's innocent. That really, when you think about it, he just was doing what everyone else has been doing probably for decades, maybe even hundreds of years.
Yeah.
And no one's ever said shit about it. Right. And now that the feds are actually saying, well, the law says this and you did that, he's going, I guess I never really thought of that, but essentially, yeah, you're right, you know? And I feel that might be part of it. I think other stuff was, he's just pocketing money and he knows it's wrong and he's doing it anyway. But I feel like some of it is almost like, I don't want to say accidental, but in the sense that, it's just been done
not
that way
malicious
for so long, it almost seems like everyone still does know it's wrong, but they're still doing it because that's just the way it's always been done, like one of those sort of things, which doesn't make it any more right, of course.
It's like getting a ticket for not wearing your seatbelt.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no one's
allowed. You know it's wrong. Yeah, exactly.
And no one probably should. Mm-hmm. I'm still not doing it.
So, it was interesting to me because, here I had the opportunity with other journalists to, we all stood up in this guy's face. After the meeting was over, they didn't really talk about it. Essentially, the meeting went off without anyone mentioning anything. Even though the two majority commissioners...
Just a giant elephant hanging out over there in the corner.
It was exactly like that. They tried to do this business as usual sort of meeting, and the two guys who had literally, days before, had called for his resignation, more or less because they had to. I know they don't get along that well.
Yeah.
So, because politically they're on the other side. But
the
guy that we're talking about is a very outspoken, controversial sort of figure to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the kind of guy that almost disagrees a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they were best buddies or anything to begin with. But they just called for his resignation days before and then didn't mention it at the meeting at all. Like, there was no... So, of course,
who called for
right
a
after the meeting... We all had to get up and get in Munchak's face and try to get all the real, the juicy stuff that we came for and we didn't get because the meeting was just business as usual. And for a brief minute, as I see that panicked look in his eyes, he's trying to be confident, but you can tell he's like not wanting to deal with this right now, but he has to. You do kind of feel like a vulture. Because essentially, you're paparazzi. You're zooming in on this guy and just bombarding him with questions you know he's not going to answer, nor does he want to answer.
Mm-hmm.
And even though he's a bad guy, essentially for a second, you almost feel bad for him. It's he got himself into this mess, and now he dug his own grave. He's got to lay in it. And if you ever see the guy, it's a big fucking grave to dig. But really, the weird thing was for a second I was like, oh, wow, this kind of sucks. I mean, I did my job. I asked what I had to ask, and, I wasn't a dick about it or anything like that, But there were certain things going on in the investigation that, we wanted to know, and, essentially I gotta know those things, so I gotta ask them. But it's definitely a different experience than sitting behind a computer and just going, fuck
just
that.
Just throwing bombs from the fucking anonymous internet.
Yeah, yeah. And, and some guys were more in your face than others. Some of the guys that got up were from papers where they went right for the throat. And they were just really digging into every little, picking apart every little thing he said.
And other guys were kind of more just what I was trying to do was just trying to be fair about it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, that is a better tactic. Sometimes you'll piss off a guy enough that he'll just say something that he wasn't supposed to. And, all right, now I got that quote.
Gotcha.
I needed,
right.
You know. A lot of times, though, you know, if you're nice to these guys, they'll give you something back. You know, they'll help you. They'll realize, all right, this is the only guy not being a douche. Well, next time I have something to say,
right.
I'm going to say it to this guy and give him the exclusive and fuck all these other guys who are, you know, being dicks to me. So, and, you know, you learn to play the game a little bit when you're a journalist. And so I've been learning to play that game for the past few months. And it's been an interesting ride, I'll tell you that. You know, it's definitely been different. And so it's a really different experience from blogging. And I think it'll affect my writing in the future, definitely.
Yeah.
And in a positive way, you know. It'll make me think more about my words and that sort of stuff. And not just, you know... I'm not going to change our aggressive attitude towards corruption or anything like that, you know, towards Republicans or these fundamental Christians or anybody else that we, you know, attack on a regular basis. But it'll definitely, you know, make me try to see their side maybe a little more and balance that perspective as well, you know. And essentially a lot of the people around here are against the mayor. So then, I can say this much, city council is very much against the mayor's agenda, and the mayor is very much open about that, and the mayor is very against city council for that, so much so that they just, like, the mayor just sued city council for not agreeing with him, which is unheard of, and it's this big political farce that, as a writer, it's great to watch. And it's great to write about because it gives you such great, interesting content. You're not just writing about these boring city council meetings where people are just passing dumb legislation.
Yeah,
exactly. You're not writing about crap. You're actually getting some juicy shit. But at the same time, you just see what a farce politics are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, too, because you see how a lot of local politics are actually a microcosm on national politics.
Right.
And it really made me rethink that because... Up until this point, I mean, I'll be fair, I paid attention to national politics and kind of ignored local politics.
Yeah.
And, you know, that old saying is right, you know, it all starts at home, you know, that and it branches out from there. And the little things that you see in local government really do branch out into national government because all these people go somewhere. You know, our mayor right now is running for state senate.
Right.
If he were, which I don't know how much of a chance he has at that, but either way... If he gets that, then he's moved to state senate now,
right.
And he moves up from there, and so on and so forth. You know,
right.
And a lot of these politicians, it seems, fail upward. You know,
and
a lot of these guys, they don't do well at their career, yet they end up being, you know, sitting senators for 40 fucking years. You know what I mean? Like,
the incumbency rate once you hit the national level is like 90%+.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a ploy for job security.
Mm-hmm.
The family nut is interesting, though. The hell was his name? Kevin Murphy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just fucking throwing names out. I don't work for the paper, so fuck it. I can throw his name out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kevin Murphy used to be on Scranton City Council.
Mm-hmm.
They came up for a re-election, and he lost.
Yeah.
He didn't get voted on. And in response to that, he ran for a higher position. He's now... Fuck. Son of a bitch. I'm going to blank on Kevin Murphy's current position. Meat of the story being that he didn't get elected as a city council member, ran for a higher office than Scranton City Council, and won somehow.
Yeah.
So, same, essentially the same pool of people voting voted against him on city council, but then somehow he had enough votes to get a higher office. And it's just mind-boggling how this shit happens.
Yeah. And, you know, and sometimes I feel...
He's a fucking state rep.
Oh, he's just... Okay.
He went from failing to get elected for Scranton City Council... to getting elected as a state representative. It's baffling.
You know, sometimes though, I feel like half these people vote like my grandmother do. You know, my
pull the Den lever and that's it. Or the Republican lever and that's it.
And even then, sometimes too, like in the case of like city council or something, there might here's 20 choices, pick your 4 or 5,
right,
for council, you know, and you know most of them might be Democrats. So which ones do you pick? She basically just filled in the names that she kind of thought sounded good, you know. And I mean, like, that's what she does, you know. Our voting place is right up the road from our my house, so.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I live next to my grandmother, so you know, I'll take her up and we'll go and you know, I fill out my thing, I throw it in there, and she's still stuck on the first one like it's a test, you know, and she's trying to figure out which is the correct
sweat
answer.
Pouring off of her brow,
yeah,
just
yeah.
Like,
and she's basically asking me
now?
How to fill in these ovals.
What now?
I don't know who any of these people are other than like who the mayor is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what the And I look around the room and I feel like a lot of people are doing that. They're just
right.
Kind of filling in names. And I think I saw that guy's name on a sign while I was driving to work one day. I'm just going to put him down.
Right.
At least I recognize his name, you
yeah.
know. But they're not really educated as to what's really going on
no.
in politics. So they might not even know a guy like Kevin
sure.
McCarthy couldn't even get into city council,
right.
you know. And it's just the whole political game is so fucking silly. And it's only become funnier to me now that it's part of my beat and I do it for
yeah.
a living. You know, now that I'm paid to pay attention to it, I really pay attention to it.
Right.
You know, before it was more or less a hobby. You
yeah.
know, it was enjoyment.
That's
it was like watching the circus. Now I'm part of the circus, really.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a fucking wild ride, I'll tell you that.
So as we approach the hour mark here to circle back to what we had gotten started on. From my perspective, working at a digital agency, seeing new media blow up obviously has worked out very well for me. I wouldn't have the job that I have if advertising online wasn't as viable as it is and companies weren't able to make as much money as they make online. At the same time, for as much as, to me, traditional media is pretty much dead, I don't listen to the radio ever. It's either CD in the car or my iPod gets hooked up to my car stereo and I listen to podcasts on my way to and from work. So I never listen to the radio. TV is rare. I'll watch Lost as it's new.
Yeah.
So ABC gets me with commercials there. Otherwise, it's Hulu and Netflix streaming. Netflix streaming preferred because there's really no commercials.
Yeah.
Hulu, there's some, not many. You'll get 3 commercials usually in a half-hour show.
Yeah.
So even TV, less and less. And I cannot remember ever sitting down to read a newspaper.
Yeah.
Now, like, if I go over to my parents' house or something, it'll be on the kitchen table or some shit like that, and so I'll pick it up and kind of flip it over, or even when I go out for lunch, when I'm waiting for, you know, the lady to make my fucking hoagie, the daily paper will be on the counter, and I'll pick it up and I'll look at the shit that's on the front page. But I wouldn't subscribe to a paper or set the time aside to sit down and read a paper. But even all that said, being so entrenched in online publishing, so much of it is complete and utter garbage.
Yeah.
That it does, you know, I still definitely appreciate the higher level of writing that you'll get from a newspaper or a magazine versus a blog. Now, there's blogs that are written incredibly well. There's blogs that are authored by people who currently or in the past worked for newspapers or major magazines, so the writing on a blog can be phenomenal and even surpass a magazine, but that's maybe 2%
yeah.
of all the sites out there. The other, you know, 90% is total shit, and the other 8% is tolerable shit.
Yeah.
So it's... I get both sides.
Yeah.
You know, that may change. It may be more than 2% with good writing eventually. As I think once you can make your living off of your blog, there's no excuse to have shitty writing.
Yeah.
When it's a hobby, okay, fine. You know, I'm not going to hold you to a fucking professional standard when you're not doing it professionally.
Right.
So it's tough because they're still two very different media forms, both trying to do the same thing in delivering news. So it'll certainly be interesting to see how it plays out. I do think that eventually newspapers are going to fucking die out just because of the age gap. Like, no one our age, late 20s, early 30s, probably even subscribes to the fucking paper. I don't know any of my friends or coworkers that subscribe to the paper, you know, but all of our grandparents do.
I don't even subscribe to my own paper, and I write for it.
Might be getting yourself fired there. But I mean, there is
its quality. I still read it.
I read it for free.
Yeah.
But there is a definite generation gap between who's subscribing to the paper and who isn't.
Right.
And it's all the fucking older demographics that are still subscribing to newspapers. Now, the question will be, as you know, people who are, you know, in their mid-30s now, as they progress towards 40, do they pick up a subscription to the paper or not? I don't know. I think it still remains to be seen. I'm going to assume no. My bet is going to be on no.
Right.
And that's going to eventually spell the death of it. It's just the generational transition. Mm. Not so much that, you know, papers just get shittier and shittier. It's just going to be their base is dying, and you know, more people who, like my fucking sister, had a computer with the internet in the house since she was in a freshman in high school, so she was like in fourth or fifth grade.
Yeah.
And we had a computer with high speed internet already. Like, she'll never subscribe to a fucking newspaper ever. Like,
yeah.
there's just no way. So it's even only going to get more in that direction as people even younger than us end up being, you know, in their 30s and 40s, and we're fucking old farts sitting on our porch shaking our fist at kids in their hoverboards and their self-drying jackets. Sadly, that reference may go over the head of all. Well, speaking of generation gap, referencing bad 80s movies is now, you know, going to be close to 20 years removed. That's kind of pushing the boundaries of our references decades.
That's pretty scary.
Yeah, it's frightening. I don't know how I feel about that.
Old. That's how I feel about that.
Yeah. Shocking.
Yeah.
So, we'll see. Maybe shit like this will, you know, fully replace radio, and blogs will fully replace fucking magazines and newspapers, and
which, you know, has its upsides and its downsides, mm-hmm. you know. And I think they balance out for the most mm-hmm. part, you know. There's a lot of good and there's a lot of bad.
Sure.
And, you know.
You gotta wonder, though, in another 100 years, what's gonna replace blogs and online video and podcasts? Like, where the fuck do you go from here?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's always something. I mean, I'm sure you told somebody even 20, 30 years ago, you know, mm-hmm. that there was going to be this thing called the internet, and then try to explain.
It's a series of tubes.
Yeah, exactly. No one's. It would just blow their mind. They would never. First of all, I'm not even going to say they would blow their minds. They would just be like, you're so full of shit.
Right.
Because that's never going to take off. That's never going to work. And it does. You know, I mean, shit, even if you told me when we were in high school that something like Twitter was going to take off, I would have been like, you're an idiot. Twitter sounds like such a 140 stupid fucking character. Idea.
Well, it is a stupid fucking idea.
It is, but it took the fuck off. You know? And it just goes to show you, not all great ideas and making it, you know, huge, and not all small, you know, small, not so great ideas end up doing nothing.
Exploding.
You know? So, you know, take that as it were, I guess. But, nevertheless, I guess that's about wraps us up.
Yep, we're just over the hour. Hopefully now a little bit more insight. I just moved back to the area not too long ago, so podcasts should be more regular.
Yeah.
Than they have been. Living 100 miles away kind of put a rather large hurdle in the way of getting a podcast recorded.
Yes.
Because making a 3-hour round trip is a little bit much to do an hour long podcast recorded.
Yeah.
But they should certainly be much more frequent and regular now that we're both local again.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, if anybody out there listening has any suggestions as to what they would like us to talk about, by all means, drop us a line. Let us know what you think of the show. And, you know, we're going to be constantly experimenting with the format and where we're going with it. And we're going to be trying some really different stuff over the next couple of months with the format and mm-hmm. sort of. Already, I think we've played with it quite a bit.
Yeah.
I think we're going to continue to play with it to sure. kind of find what people are looking for and mm-hmm. what entertains them and what keeps us entertained as well.
Even hate mail. I haven't gotten hate mail in a while. Like an actual email hate mail? It's been a long time since I get comments.
Ever
and
since
shit,
I but. Started this job, it's been tough for me to do the more big articles, which yeah. is really what our original content is what gets people more than, say, our posts where we're just featuring someone else's video
sure.
or something like that. You know, we do that stuff so we keep updated, but, mm-hmm. you know, I haven't had the time lately to sit down and write, a really nice,
right.
meaty article.
Charlie Checkin article.
Yeah, something that'll piss
people
off.
Fuck Charlie Checkin.
Yes, fuck that guy, by the way.
Side note.
Yeah, we should just do a whole podcast just bashing that guy just to make him mad.
I think he'd come on our podcast.
Well, considering he has no real career and nothing better to do, yeah, I'd imagine than sit on the internet and whine about all his critics. I'd imagine, yeah, he probably would.
That'd be interesting. You know what would be ironic? If he was actually, a really well-spoken dude. And this whole, thug thing was just, a shtick to try and
yeah.
break into the entertainment business.
Well, in my argument in my article, which I still feel is kind of valid, was the fact that I feel like the whole atheism thing is kind
a
of
shtick.
A shtick.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of his, I think his anti-gay thing is a shtick as well. I mean, it gets
yeah.
him noticed.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, he's not very good at what he does. He's not talented. He's not interesting and not even listenable. But if you get enough, controversy stirred up, you know, which
Rush Limbaugh makes millions of dollars spouting his nonsense.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
it's a formula that works, I guess. But
right. So if he's gonna, you know, take a hot button issue and turn it into his songs, if you really want to call him that, then by all, you know,
wow.
he's gonna make money. You know, he's gonna. Well,
I wonder if he's making any money.
I'm sure he probably gets a few bucks off of, people, you know, buying, a digital
yeah.
single or something.
Buy and roll with an atheist from the iTunes store.
I don't think anyone's bought
no.
that one, let's
yeah,
be
right.
fair.
Yeah,
maybe
right.
one of those fag-hating ones. But essentially, probably the same guy that he markets to is the same guy he is. You know, a guy who is probably not too sure about his own sexuality.
Yes.
But he's got a really...
So if I fuck the dude in the butt... That doesn't make me all the way gay, right? Because
yeah.
I didn't get fucked.
Well, it was in prison, so...
yeah, that doesn't count,
it
right?
Doesn't
I
count.
Heard that.
That's
and
not
it,
real
you
life.
Know, yeah, prison doesn't count. Got
yeah,
it.
That's okay.
Maybe that's probably the title of his upcoming album.
Yeah.
Charlie Checkin, fucking dudes in prison doesn't make me gay.
It makes you gay.
yes. I'm not gay, but my bitch is.
Your criticism of me makes you gay.
But, yes.
Yeah. You know. But I'm not.
Got
yeah.
it. So look for that on shelves this summer.
Yeah, that'll be a mix.
oh, poor Charlie. Poor Charlie Checkin.
I gotta do an update eventually, just to keep it going, because you know I can't let anything go. You know me. You know.
True.
I like to you know just when the fire seems almost
scab starts forming over, you have
yeah,
to tear it off
I
and throw some salt on.
Yeah, I. poke at that fire until it starts up again, and that's probably what will happen. Nice.
Well, I'm sure his cousin will be back to bury you.
His cousin or himself posing as a cousin. Yes. Whatever it may be. I'm
when he's
sure.
trying to attract the dudes online, that's his persona.
Yeah, wow.
All right.
So
enough Charlie Checker bashing the whole last 10 minutes of the show here.
All right, folks. You have a good night, morning, whenever you're listening to this.
Until next time.
This has been a That Thin Line production. For more muckmaking, visit our blog at muckmakers.com.